I said off air we put Borislav Mihailov because we could actually borrow his hair to use.
Genuine hair. Festive cheer may be in the air, but there's precious little goodwill around the Medeski Stadium after a 3-1 capitulation at Nottingham Forest leads to more than 50% of voters wanting Steve Clarke to get the boot. We'll look at whether it's time to wave goodbye to the Scotsman, as well as looking at how else Clarke or someone else can help get our season back on track. All that, plus a look ahead to Thursday's game with QPR, a bumper mailbag, and much more on the Tardis End Podcast, episode 76. Hello, and thank you very much for downloading and taking the time to listen. If you've got this far, it means you've hit the play button. But just merely downloading fills our hearts with joy. So thank you for going the extra mile. My name's Dan Wimbush, host of this fair podcast and editor of thetardisend.com. I'm joined this week by Mr. Alan West, known as Westy. Westy, hello.
Hello, everyone.
And making his return to the regular podcast, Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
I'm the one they call when things go wrong.
They've gone badly wrong.
Things have indeed gone wrong.
We've exhausted all other options, so we'd like to bring you back.
We've even drafted
reduced terms.
And we've even drafted in Wim's dad more recently through a pressure.
Well, the thing is, when you've got so many people on loan for the podcast, you can only have a few of them
that's it.
In your matchday squad.
You can't have them all there.
I'm finally getting my chance again.
Good.
No, quick straw poll, gentlemen. Day before, tomorrow is December 1st. Have you got your decorations up yet?
No.
No, Johnny?
I only just remembered to buy an advent calendar today.
Last minute.
Could have gone tomorrow and got it like half price or something.
What did you get, Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Thorntons.
Very fancy.
Good effort.
Thank you. Johnny's obviously been earning some money while he's been away from this podcast.
Yeah, new job.
Same job I've had for ages.
Oh, okay.
Obviously some good luck at the track.
Must have been.
Gamble away.
No.
Certainly not so good news to track. Well, it's not been good news on the pitch for Reading, so let's just delve right into that mess at Forest.
View from the Tarhurst End.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
So, Nottingham Forest 3, Reading 1 at the City Ground. Not a great afternoon for Reading, all things considered. And all this coming after we took the lead, gents. What were your initial reactions to this latest defeat? Silence.
Yeah, it's quite hard to put into words, really, isn't it? Because something is going wrong, and I think everyone sort of has an idea of what's going wrong, and nobody's really quite sure or able to put their finger on it, because the team are still playing well in patches, but not consistently enough to win games. And if you look over the last month or so, the only win we've had is the 2-1 win against Bolton, and that was hardly convincing, and they're, now bottom of the league and in absolute financial turmoil. So I think, when you were previewing this game, you said, I think if you score two goals, basically you've won, or Forest have never scored more than two goals in a game. So for us to let in three against Forest, who aren't exactly on the best run of form themselves, is sorely disappointing, and possibly a low point of the season that's had already a lot of highs and lows.
Especially, Westy, after we took the lead.
Yeah, again, we've took the lead away from home. It's not the first time it's happened in previous weeks. And we can't see out a game. And it's not only that, we're scoring and then we seem to be conceding within the next 10 minutes or so. And it keeps happening and he needs to do something about it. Like I said to you off air, I was looking at what Charles Watts had to say this week and I thought he was pretty much bang on. When Clarke said to him, we go out to win every game, he said, but you're not winning, so come up with a different plan. And he doesn't seem to have one. Now, what concerns me as well is we've got all these loan players in, which you alluded to at the start of the podcast, but none of them seem to be used and the ones that are getting used don't seem to be very good. So I don't know why he doesn't away from home. He's got Fernandez there. He's got Ola John. He's got a bit of pace. I know McCleary didn't play this week, but he could play counter-attacking football away from home. We've got three players there. Blackman, McCleary. Yeah, McCleary and...
Vidra?
No, the young lad, from the Dutch fella.
Oh, Ola John.
And Ola John, who have got pace. Why not play counter-attacking football? Field and midfield, stop conceding goals, and try and catch teams on the break. Because what we're doing at the moment clearly isn't working.
Yeah, let's get the positives out of the way. That Vidra goal, good to see him back on the goal trail. He's obviously been dealing with a knee injury. Shell said on the podcast extra late last week that he was in and out of training all week. Two goals now, slowly getting to see some of the better parts of Vidra's game.
I'm surprised he didn't try to pass it there. Normally that's his MO, isn't it? Get into great goal scoring opportunities and try and pass it. But yeah, I mean, hopefully Matty Vidra can pick up now because we know that he can score goals and he's got that poaching instinct. And that was exactly that with that goal, to pick up on the ball in the box and, slot it calmly past the keeper.
I thought it was a beautifully disguised shot as well. Yeah. A really beautifully disguised shot.
Miss hit much?
It choked it into the ground, yeah.
So Reading take a lead. As you mentioned, it's not the first time. You think Sheffield Wednesday, Fulham, Rotherham. They've been doing this quite often. And once again, unfortunately, they capitulate. Starts with Chris O'Grady grabbing the equaliser. Now, just when Ali El-Habsi lured you into thinking, ah, this good old goalkeeper of old is back, he commits an absolute howler. Okay, it was a fairly powerful shot, but it's right at him. And he just sort of puts his arms out and just kind of, I can't even describe it, just kind of goes through his arms.
It's a bit of a flap, wasn't it?
Yeah, head over to thetarleton.com and have a look at it yourself. But it's just awful goalkeeping. There's no other way around it. And the defence, God knows what they must think about their goalkeepers at the moment, because the amount of points and goals they've cost them this season.
Yeah, but it's El-Habsi all over. We spoke about him a million times. He will make two or three world-class saves and then he'd let one go through his legs and concede a goal. He's never going to be any different. And at 34, however old he is now, it's not going to change soon, is it?
Yeah, but I don't think the only problem is with the goalkeeper, because you look at the last couple of weeks, certainly Michael Hector's put him in a couple of positions where, you know, I remember one where he had to run back and clear it off his own line, I think possibly against Huddersfield. And another one, they had a bit of a mix-up last week. So when you've got a defence that is not confident back there, you're going to make those sorts of errors, because especially at the back, you need that confidence, not only in your goalkeeper, but in your back four as well. And you see with the other goals as well that really poor defending all throughout. So I think El-Habsi had one of the best games we've seen from any player this season last time out against Bolton.
But it gets a minute, didn't
inexcusable it? Mistake this time out. And as you say, it's, you know, the highs and lows of what you're going to get with him.
Do you keep him in net on Thursday night against QPR?
Yeah, I keep him in. I think, again, you can't blame him for all three goals. And it was, I always say to when I'm coaching kids, is if you stop people shooting, you stop conceding goals. But if you're going to let them have three shots at goal, you rely on your goalkeeper to make saves, he's not always going to do that.
Yeah, and that was Reading's one of the main strengths when they were having that good run. I think they're giving away the fewest shots in the division.
Yeah.
As well as having the most
abnormally low amount of shots.
You mentioned Michael Hector there, Johnny. He's coming for a lot of stick from fans. A lot of people are telling him to go to Chelsea. Go back to Chelsea, although he's not technically been there, I suppose. And just telling him to basically get out of the team. Have you? Is your patience with Mr. Hector run out?
I think it has, yeah. And it's quite sad, really, because this is the Hector that we were seeing when Nigel Adkins was manager. A Hector that had a mistake in him, didn't have that confidence, had that laziness about him, I think you'd call it. Clark managed to sort it out last year, and you remember the performance against Arsenal, he was an absolute rock, and obviously, and that's why Chelsea have taken the punt on him. But in the last couple of weeks, last couple of months, he's reverted to that type of just making a small little error, looking like he doesn't really care about the game. And I know Pearson gets the assist, if you like, or the criticism for that.
Oh, we'll come on to Pearson, don't you worry.
But you look at Hector as well, and he's a centre-back, and he is lightly jogging back. And he just about gets there in time. And you think, that's a man who's not putting in the effort. And
there's a few, though, aren't there? I think one of the main problems at the moment is there's too many players going through the motions. Mm. Hector, definitely one. Piazza, we're going to come on to, definitely one. Lad up front, definitely one. Sarr. They're not giving you all they've got.
There's too many flair players in the team.
And there's too many people not doing the hard work. And I think, again, we're missing Quinn and players like that. We'll battle on kicking. Punch, but the players that are on the pitch now clearly aren't doing it.
Yeah, and how many times did we say last season the team's lacking leaders?
Yeah.
And they've gone. I said McShane's doing his best, but there's only so much he can do. I've just about had enough of Hector. I don't see why Reading are putting up with his growing pains. If he's not performing here and now, get him out of the team. And it's exactly the same with Lucas Pearson as well. Pearson, who's averaging 5.5 out of 10 in our player ratings, which is by far the lowest of any regular.
He's done well to get that.
Well, if you compare it to the man he's basically replaced, which is Stephen Quinn. Stephen Quinn's on 6.6.
Yeah.
And that's quite a large jump when you consider most of our ratings are between 4 and 8. So, is there any way you can defend the Brazilian?
No.
No, I hate him.
The only way...
Strong.
The only way you can defend him is that he's coming up on the stat sheet. But he's not coming up on the pitch. If you go to a game and you watch him, you think that's a boy who just doesn't get championship football. Doesn't get football for a start. No. But he gets a goal here, an assist there, and it's almost frustrating to watch because you're willing him not to do well so that he can get out of the team. But he comes through in important moments. So I guess, you know, Steve Clarke is sort of saying, well, I can't drop him if he scores. But then he puts in a performance like that and you've got every single reason to.
And he copped the ump as well, didn't he, when he come off?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did he chuck his shirt down or something? I didn't see exactly what happened.
Yeah, Charles tweeted something like, Lucas Pearson doesn't seem too pleased.
to come off, and I tweeted back, I wasn't too pleased to see him start, but you don't see me coming.
No, I don't think anyone's too pleased to see him start.
Lucas Bearson, you know, I played, and so have you, Johnny, Football Manager for years. There's always that, you know, you have that player that has a 5 out of 10 and scores a goal, and you play this game, you think, oh, that's unrealistic. Yeah. That never happens in real life. Then you watch Lucas Pearson, and suddenly it all becomes clear.
Yeah,
don't get it. Don't get it at all. I can't see him sticking around the team. Hopefully the likes of Tariq Fosu, who's had a good start to loan life down at Fleetwood, comes back.
Well, we spoke about this before. I mean, he's got two players on loan that are wingers. One of them never plays, and Piazon shouldn't play. And he's got a young player who set the last game of the season alight, and he sent him out on loan to Fleetwood.
You're forgetting the person we bought, Paolo Hurtado.
Yeah, and again, another player
can't get anywhere near
doesn't
the team.
Get near the team. I don't understand that.
I think I checked, this might be just before the Forest game, but certainly around that time, three starts combined for Alex Fernandez, Ola John.
Yeah, it's a waste of time.
And Hurtado.
It's a waste of time. If you're not going to get players in that are going to make the side better, why have them in at all?
Very good question. And that is a stick that's been used to beat Steve Clark in recent weeks. But, I mean, there's not much else to say about it. I mean, the third goal. Just poor marking in the box again. Just how many times have people been getting free opportunities on goal? The cross, there wasn't a particularly strong opposition to the cross either. And, you know, he touched on the second as well. To break away from a corner and score is almost unforgivable. We get Lucas Pearson putting up a real fight to get that ball back.
Yeah, I mean, he was busting a gut to get back there.
I love that Clark said after the game, we talked about not conceding a goal from a corner. And do you have to tell the players that?
Should
that not be an automatic thing? Lads, when we've got our own corner, what I don't want you to do is concede from it.
But that was a dreadful goal to concede as well. It was an awful corner. It was more of a clearance than it was a corner. And then they've scored out of, our attack. It was a good finish, but even so, I mean, that is the shambles, isn't it? Against a team, let's face it, we're not very good.
Yeah, I mean, we've got lots of comments on Clark in the mailbag, so I'll leave our thoughts on the manager there. But just in terms of this game, have you got any sympathy for him?
No.
No?
No.
You put this defeat down to him rather than the players?
I put it down to all of them. They're all collectively responsible. But end of the day, he's the manager and you take the blame.
Johnny?
I don't know if I've got sympathy towards him, but I don't think it's all entirely on his head. And I'm sure this is something we'll come on to as well, but I don't think it's time for him to go yet because, you know, he's shown us the loyalty allegedly, so he needs to, you know, buck his ideas up and then we'll make the decision for him if things don't pick up. I certainly think you've got to give him a little bit more time because it's clear now that some of the players that he's brought in aren't delivering him what he's wanting, and some of the players who are injured are more important to the team than we thought.
Can't disagree with it. Well, I suppose the only positive to take other than that Vidra goal was the fact that we haven't actually lost ground. We've lost a couple of places in the league, but we're only 1 point outside the playoff places. So, at the moment, I mean, if you'd said at the start of the season you're going into December 1 point off the playoff places, don't think too many people would have complained.
No, but if you'd have stayed in a position where we were second and we were flying, you'd have thought...
Yeah. If you'd said after the Middlesbrough game, you'd only win two out of the next, what is it, seven or eight.
It's not good enough, is it?
And those two wins were over Charlton and Bolton.
Yeah, and they were spawny. Yeah, they were spawny as well.
So, anyway, watch this space. Right, as I said, we'll have plenty more to say on Steve Clark and the situation going forward throughout the rest of the show. But in the meantime, let's just move on to a couple of news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So news-wise, gents, not an awful lot going on. I'm sure it'll pick up as the transfer window reopens in just over 4 weeks' time. It was the loan deadline last week. Steve Clark deciding not to any business. He's already got six loanees, so he thought he didn't want to muddy the water anymore.
None of them are much good, so...
No. A couple of younger players did leave on loan. We've covered them in recent weeks, but Andrei Novakovic, I don't know. He joined National League Leaders Cheltenham, the league formerly known as the Conference, and he made his debut at half-time. He helped him beat Aldershot 2-0, so good lad.
Good.
He's made a good start.
I'm interested to see how he does, actually. I mean, they're raving about him in the under-21s and that, and he's been sort of on the brink of the bench a couple of times.
Well, he has been on the bench. He came on a couple of times late last season.
That's what I'm saying. So it'd be nice to see how he goes at Cheltenham.
Yep. He's joining Rob Dickey down there as well. He's the defender who's played pretty much every game for them this season. Lots of other loanees, as we mentioned other weeks. Tariq Fosu's out, so's Dom Samuel. Jack Stacey's also made a move as well. So lots to keep on top of, and we will have a full loan report in the next week or so. George is busy compiling all the opinions and news and views on those, so stay tuned to thetarlhurstend.com for that. The other news, slightly more boring news, I'm afraid, unless train stations are your thing, in which case, this is right up your alley. For years now, we've been teased with this idea that there will be a station at the Medeski Stadium, the Green Park Station. Looked like it was finally going ahead, especially with the whole Royal Elm Park development. Unfortunately, the government have decided to not spend any money upgrading the railway line that goes through it. So, at the moment, it's not looking likely until after 2019.
Yeah, and the electrification of the line has to happen in order for Green Park to happen.
Yep, to do with these trains actually being able to stop there. Right. So we could be in a situation where...
Can I just slow down and people jump off?
Yeah, well, it's one suggestion.
Or if it's a particularly bad result, then you could always
jump in front of it.
Come on. Boo, bad form. Anyway, the knock-on effect for this, obviously beyond getting to and from games, is the Royal Elm Park development, but... The people behind the plans have said it's not dependent on the station, so they're pressing ahead. They're just going to make extra provisions for bus services.
I would have thought that it would be quite a big part of the planning for it, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't think so. I just think they chuck them up and sell them. I don't think they're too worried about how we get there and how we get
there. And the line eventually will come online, won't it?
One day.
Yeah, but it's still 2 or 3 years of absolute chaos.
Well, again, to make money.
Depends when the actual development gets finished, I suppose.
Yeah. But they're going to have to start it relatively soon, aren't they? You'd expect it to be done in the next 2 years or so.
Well, I think they say they're starting from next year as long as it all goes ahead. Yeah, and then they're getting rid of car park.
They soon crack on.
Do I need to buy my ice skates already? Should I have not have asked for ice skates this Christmas if the ice rink's going to be finished this quick?
It's a bit ill-conceived, don't it, if no one's got anywhere to park their car. It's definitely going to affect attendances, isn't it?
There's going
to
be one multi-story car park, isn't there? Johnny, you took a look at the plans, didn't you, originally?
Yeah, I think it's about I can't remember the exact number, but it's certainly not as many as
it's
a decrease,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think the car park at the moment holds about 1,500 cars.
Yeah.
And obviously they're not going to be anywhere near that amount. So there's going to have to be a lot of buses and a lot of people changing their plans.
A lot of people won't bother.
Yeah, what if you drive from, say, not Basingstoke because you can easily get the train, but, you know, you know, somewhere that necessitates you driving because it's too much to get the train or takes you too long.
It's what I'm saying, people just won't be bothered with a hassle. Mm. I don't want to get on a bus or the train, I can't be bothered. I'll just drive up there, get out and watch going go home.
Well, that's not even taken into consideration the fact they still actually want to expand the stadium if we get promoted.
Yeah, okay.
So you can imagine trying to get another 5,000 people in there.
Yeah, they're going to have to come up with a better plan than that, I think.
That's the one nice thing about Reading being a bit rubbish at the moment. It's really easy getting to and from games.
Yeah.
Use that as a justification, really.
Okay. Stay rubbish so I can get home nice and easy. Unfortunately, that won't be the case on Thursday night, but we'll come on to that a little bit later on. No pub chat this week. Obviously, we have got a bumper mailbag to get through. Lots of reaction to the recent form and to Steve Clark. So we're just going to spend extra time there. We did have a couple of good pub chat suggestions, a couple of good emails in. One talking about who we'd put in a Reading Hall of Fame. And also another one looking at old grounds versus new grounds. So
was it more of a Madame Two Swords?
You'd get your statues and your waxworks.
And like I said off air, we put Borislav Mihailov because we could actually borrow his hair to use.
Genuine hair. So, well, thank you very much for those suggestions. As I said, send them in to thetarlestend@gmail.com. It is a show by the fans for the fans. If you do have suggestions for pub chat, we're more than happy to take them on board.
Before we move on that last subject, if we did Borislav Mihailov, right, in the Hall of Fame, behind him would we have Wembley Stadium, the old one?
Oh, yeah,
because he thought it was the home ground.
His face when he turned up at Elm Park.
He must have been great.
He was like, in shock. So this is the training ground, right?
Yeah, it must have been. Yeah, it must have been like, mustn't he? I don't know who sold him that one, but good work.
Smoothly done. Speaking of deceiving everybody, let's move on to another award-winning part of this podcast, the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at thetarlhurstend
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
So a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch with the show this week via all the usual channels, be it at thetarlhurstend on Twitter using #TTPodcast, via thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for your emails, and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. Start with a few bigger emails. We've got in, starting from Matt Castle, who says, when you watch Reading play, one of the things it's easy to notice is the space in between the attack and the defence. We seem to split into two groups, leave a huge gap in the middle. It restricts the number of passing options our players have and makes it easy for our opponents to transition from defence into attack. Our defenders are left exposed. It makes more sense to attack and defend as a team. My question to you all is, do you think Clark should be given the time to try and get us up when we are guaranteed to go straight back down playing like this? Surely we're better off cutting our losses and getting a coach that walks the walk instead of talking the talk. I would actually disagree with it because I think Clark is actually probably better suited to be a Premier League manager than a Championship manager.
But... we've had this argument year after year after year. Do you want to go up playing the way we do? Blah, blah, blah. Mm. But it doesn't make no difference. You go up and then you play differently anyway because the Premier League's a different beast. It's not like the Championship. So you find that your players raise their game every week and they put in more of an effort and they want to stay in the Premier League. And teams play differently against Reading. It's not as if they're going to come here and sit in. They will come and attack you. So it bears no relevance this year to next year. Because he might buy six players and it'll be a different team anyway.
Johnny, on the tactical front, have you noticed a bit more of a gap?
Certainly. I mean, if you look at, say, a goal kick or when one of our centre-backs has got the ball, you do see the four attackers all in a line, basically static, not even moving. And there's absolutely nothing in the midfield. And like you say, it's so easy for the opposition to sweep up. And you do sort of think, well, you know, come on, can we play between the lines or... Yeah, try something different, but all it ever is exactly the same, and it's quite daunting.
And Clark can get them playing that way. If you look at how they played against Arsenal with two very solid banks, they're just not doing it.
Yeah, and I think this is the thing. Like I said, I don't think you should be getting rid of him just yet because you have seen in fits and spurts that the team can perform well. You know, we talked about the results against Middlesbrough, Burnley, Ipswich. You know, that was a tremendous run of form. Just unfortunately now, we're in a dipper form. And like you were saying as well, it's all about context. We're now seventh in the league or a point off the playoffs. That's not a bad position to be in at all.
Yeah, but it isn't a bad position to be in. But their top five don't seem to lose games or very rarely lose games. They look better than us all of a sudden where we were beating them not so long ago. So, all right, we've been missing a couple of players. I mean, people are saying Tish Bowler, but all right, Tish Bowler is a good young player, but he's not had a run of games who you think actually makes a hell of a difference.
I don't think he's had a standout game. He's been
solid. That's what I'm saying. He's just solid. He's not... Yeah. I think people are saying we're missing him. We're not missing him because he hardly played when he was fit.
I think we're missing him.
Yeah, we're missing someone to come in and do that job, but he wasn't starting every week. He hasn't played 10 games on the bounce, has he? He's a player that's around the squad, but I don't think he's that big.
No, I think he got more starts than you realise. I think he was involved in every squad until he got injured. Certainly on the least on the bench.
Yeah, he was on the bench. I'm not disagreeing with you. But you're not missing him to the point where he's affecting our results. Quinn, you could argue that probably is. It's just that the other players aren't putting enough in.
We'll come on a bit more Clark, because we've got a lot of Clark questions. So we'll sort of round them all up and have a bit of a big discussion on Clark after it. I'll just get through the rest of these emails first. Ben Malley, we're all about embracing misery here on this podcast, if you haven't gathered that from the previous 75 episodes. And this one is another unfortunate tale. Ben Malley says, if you thought your day out with Forest was miserable, just know I've flown in from California for that. As the only matches shown in the States this season have been Ipswich and Everton, it's hard to believe that this is mostly the same side, barring a few key injuries, when they can't even string a handful of passes together. I'll be in Y25 on Thursday before I have to head back home, hoping for the best but expecting the worst. If the team won't perform for Clark, maybe they can do it for someone who travelled 6,500 kilometres to see them. That is a long way to go. I get the hump when I've come from Tarlhurst.
Yeah, but
that's bad enough.
At least you know you've got something to look forward to after the game. You can go back to California.
Sit in the sun.
Yeah, exactly.
And moving on, Jack Killick says, one word sums up that performance. Disgraceful. I can't even explain how angry it makes me to see Pearson play. Doesn't care about Reading at all, only himself. No gives 100% and can't defend to save his life. Also, not sure whether it's a coincidence that our worst players in that game were all low knees. And I'm sorry, but Hector shouldn't play. Made O'Grady look like a world beater. Finally, Clark's tactics are well off. No clue what he's trying to do. Overcomplicating things. Needs someone new in with fresh ideas. Moving on the Clark hate and the Clark love. Brian Davis, come on Reading FC, sack Clark and make a move for Jimmy Floyd before someone else poaches him. Charles Dapper, so Clark puts our leading goal scorer who's better with his left out on the right? Derek Walmsley, do you think it might be worth the ties firing Clark just for the lols? Daniel Roy Mackay, I personally think Clark should go. I don't say it lightly as I've backed him all the way, but we are always going to refer to his talks with Fulham and there will always be doubt. Also, we can take the unprofessional joke of a footballer, Hal Robson Canoe, with him. John Hyde, giving Clark a bit of backing here, says the amount of people who want Clark out shows the short-sightedness of lots of fans. I'm confused why he's over and over again trying the same system with similar players expecting different results. The season started really well, and this is his squad, so unless the tie's going to give a new manager lots more money, we should give Clark longer. And then a couple more. Alex Everson says, if Clark stays, where do we finish? If he leaves, the same question. And that, I think, is about it. So lots of strong opinions there on Clark. Lots of talking points. We'll start with Brian Davis's one. Would you, if you were offered it now, would you take Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank over Steve Clark, one former Chelsea player for another?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so.
Reportedly in talks with QPR, although he seems to have denied that today.
Yeah, no, Jimmy Floyd-Asbury, he's done well, but he's not proved to me that he can step up the leagues yet. And when he does, he probably won't come here anyway. So. No, again, Jimmy Floyd-Asbury, he doesn't... The thing is with Clark, he doesn't inspire anything in me. You know what I mean? He never really has. I don't think to myself, oh, when he was in talks with Fulham, I genuinely thought, and so what? I wasn't bothered. If he left, I wouldn't have cared less.
Johnny, we spoke up in Manchester when it looked like Clark was out the door and saying, can he come back and can he repair his relationship with the fans? He's not doing a good job of it so far, is he? We ran a poll up on the Tarlest End after the Forest game, and admittedly emotions are high, but the poll has been up for several days now and it's still over 50% of people want him sacked.
Yeah, and I guess ironically I was one of the people who said, you know, it's quite difficult for him to repair his relationship from here, but you know, I think what's done is done. You just got to sort of move on from it and hope that he can do things better. I think over time it will hopefully boil over and, you know, hopefully he'll get more out of the squad. But I think the other question I'd ask is, do you think that another manager could get more out of the squad? Because we said that there's a lot of flair players in there and not too many battlers. And I don't think when you've got that roster, if you like, of players, I don't think many other managers could get more out of it. Maybe a tiny bit more, but...
Okay, maybe, yeah, maybe, but end of day, it's his squad, isn't it? Surely you should have noticed this start with.
Well, I did.
There's no excuse, is it?
Well, I did a piece on the Tarlest End giving sort of four reasons why he should stay and four why he should go. But one of the reasons I put for why he should go is just that point you made. You know, he's built a team and he's put it so full of flair players. He does deserve some stick for the way he's constructed that squad because it's light in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's light up front. There's no backup really for Sarr.
We've got tons of wingers and none of them play. And we had no wingers last year, and now we've got tons of wingers and none of them get a game.
It's confusing. And again, I lean at the moment towards giving him January, giving him a chance to make the additions he needs, get those injured players back. I know Daniel said get rid of the joke of Hal Robson-Kanu, but Hal Robson-Kanu was certainly up until a couple of weeks ago our leading assist maker.
He was playing.
He was actually playing well.
Even I said he was playing well, so he must have been playing
and
well.
And you look at how much more he contributes defensively than a Pearson or an Ola John. Again, I think it's a part of why we're going backwards because, I pointed to the Quinn injury being the big one, but we were still winning games without Quinn because Robson-Kanu came in and did a really good job replacing him. It's since the two of them have both been out that the form sort of really dried up and gone off the rails.
But I think you're going back to your poll, sorry, very quickly, is if there is a 50-50 split...
Well, it's not 50-50. It's 50% want him gone now, 35% want to give him a few games, and 15% are just saying no backing.
Okay, yeah, so, all right, so there's probably more against than for.
So 85% are certainly considering his future.
But I think it sort of mirrors my opinion that I don't think anyone's overly bothered, either way.
No.
And that's not a good thing as a manager, is it? Either you've got to inspire loyalty and everyone's behind you, or... they hate you and they'll want you out. I think he's made no impression really on anyone. I don't think anyone really cares.
And someone pointed out on Twitter as well, it's been a good 2-3 games now since anyone sung Steve Clarke's Barmy Army, which I know is a very flimsy metric and measuring support, but it does show that, you know, people will say that, oh, it's the Twitterverse or, you know, keyboard warriors or whatever wanting him out. Yeah. But the fans at the games aren't getting behind it.
No, not only that, like we said earlier, the players, a lot of them, are putting in substandard performances. And if you can't get your own players playing for you, then that inspires nobody, does it?
What about Alex's point then? He says, if Clark stays, where do we finish? And if he leaves, the same question.
Do you think
Reading... I suppose this boils down to this. Do you think Reading are going to be better if Steve Clark stays or if he goes?
It really depends in terms of if we recruit anyone in January. Like I said, I don't think anyone could get better out of this squad than Steve Clarke is doing at the moment because I don't think there is enough bite in the midfield. I don't think that the centre-backs are quite right at the moment. The two goalkeepers, when everything's going well, when everything's going well, you think, you know, the world's at your feet, but then you start to see the cracks when things are going wrong. But I don't think anyone could... or certainly anyone that we have realistic sights of could do better in terms of the squad at the moment. If you're going to give someone else a chance in January to remedy things, then possibly. But I don't think you've seen enough to give Clark the boot.
Well, we're seeing the same from the last couple of managers as well, because it's starting to resemble Nigel Adkins' sort of reign, and you almost have to look at his time in charge in a different light when you look at how Clark has struggled, because Clark has got a worse championship record than Adkins.
Yeah, and again, he's been allowed not only to change the team virtually completely, but he's also been allowed to change the back room completely.
Yeah.
And they're still not looking like they're giving him 100% on the pitch. Not all of them, anyway.
Yeah, and we thought that, oh, well, when you got rid of a certain amount of players in the summer, maybe that got rid of some of the worst elements. But you look at the players left behind, and it's some of the same faces that were underperforming again under Nigel Adkins, just not pulling their weight again.
And we said it, we're looking at the goals from the Forest game. I mean, players are sauntering back or not really putting in a full effort to stop that ball getting crossed in or shot a goal. And I think if you've got players that are doing that for you, and you've bought them, or at least you're playing them every week, that's a worry. You say, I'd like to see Nigel Pearson given a chance, see if people rattling back at like 5 mile an hour, hardly trying. I'm sure he'd let them know that wasn't good enough.
Yeah, lots of people looking at the tactics. Neil Brammer as well says, 3 or 4 goals conceded in a defo howler. Pearson can't play left midfield. No protection for the left back. Why don't we play 4-3-3? Connor saying, entire team are lacking ideas and imagination. For a team set up to attack, how many goal scoring chances did we have? Having quickly glanced through the game, apart from Ollie's free kick and a couple of Williams pop shots, absolutely nothing. Our defensive stubbornness has long disappeared. Opponents look likely to score with every attack. So many parallels to the team of last season in terms of performances. Promise shown, but ultimately they look like bottlers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, they do look like bottlers, yes. But, I mean, we have played a 4-3-3 a couple of games ago when McCleary played in the middle. People screaming at him, you know, to get out wide. But ultimately, his role was to play in the middle. And why is he playing in the middle? Because he's got a couple of injuries in the middle. In terms of bottlers, absolutely, yes. I think it's pretty obvious to see that there's not particularly anyone that looks like a leader in the team. And I think you've got to be considering that when you're constructing your squad. You know, I've said that I don't think anyone else could get the best out of this squad, but I do think that Clark has assembled a squad that I think almost would do better in the Premier League, where you know, the stage is bigger and you're allowed a bit more flair rather than the almost stereotypical hustle and bustle of Championship football. I don't think they're suited to. It's puzzling, and yeah, I wouldn't like to be the one who makes the decision, but I'd lean towards giving him a little bit more time at the moment.
Yeah, and I think they will. I don't think they will sack him. Don't get me wrong, but I just don't see what he's getting out of him at the moment. And
this is a man who took us to an FA Cup semi-final 6 months ago.
It is,
and
has
engineered.
But anyone could have a good
had
cup
six
run.
Wins in 7 games, like less than 2 months ago.
Yeah. So what's gone wrong in the meantime?
Well, but this is the short termism. It was all going absolutely brilliantly 2 months ago. It doesn't just overnight go downhill like that. And yeah, I think you've got to give him a chance.
Okay, if you look at his reign overall, and you take out the fact that we had a good cup run, which could happen to anyone really. I know they played great, and they had a good opportunity to get to semi-final because they played Bradford. They was brilliant against Arsenal.
Yeah,
he's won 13 out of 43 league games.
Yeah, but he's won 13 out of 43 league games, and that is poor. That is poor.
No, I'm not doubting that.
If you take the FA Cup out of it, it's been dreadful so far. All right, he's had a few blips here and there. We've had a couple of good results, or we've had a run of decent results. But over the course of his tenure, he's not done well enough, I don't think.
Yeah, well, you take that run of 6 wins out of 7, and I think it leaves you with, 7 wins out of 36?
We could have quite easily got relegated last year.
Yeah, but, you know, if you take away the 15 losses or whatever we had last year, then you've got 13 wins out of 28.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, Johnny.
Yeah, I know, but you know, can twist stats anyway.
He's had sort of 2 purple patches, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And apart from that, it's been pretty dross.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be any pattern, style, or what we're trying to do. I don't think anyone really sees anything.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, with Nigel Adkins, I remember we had these conversations last year and the season before. We were like, well, give him until the injured players get back and then see how it comes. Those injured players came back and it just didn't get any better. And so I can absolutely understand why there is 50% out there of people that just want him gone, because they're just saying, look, he's not getting the best out of the players. Yeah. And if you're not a manager that's getting the best out of your players, you need to move on.
And arguably, that's the strongest squad we've had for years.
And everybody's going to have injuries.
Yeah.
Very, very rare. I mean, the 106 team were a bit of a freak in that they didn't really lose players in key positions until, I mean, they lost Lita, but they're already up by then.
Yeah, didn't matter.
And I know there was a couple of midfield injuries, but they had Gunnarsson to nip in.
Yeah, but what they had is they had steady championship footballers.
And
you know,
battlers.
He bought steady championship
hungry ones as well, very hungry ones.
Whereas now we haven't got steady championship footballers. We've got a lot of, like you say, flair players that have not really played in the championship that don't look like can cut it. And he's brought them in. There's no one else to blame but himself, is there?
No.
The only 2 players that you could say that have really come in and done well is Taylor at left back. Looks decent. He looks like a solid championship defender. The centre back,
McShane,
who is brilliant and he's played there before. And Quinn, who's played there before. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, absolutely not.
No, I completely agree.
I was going to ask this at the end, but then I'll ask it now then. So, as of right now, you're suddenly given the power. Back or sack? Sacks. Right now.
Gone. Get your stuff. Go down to Fulham. Get
Johnny?
I'd keep him. I think he knows what he needs to do in terms of if he's given any money in January and what he needs to do with the squad.
I'm giving him the next two games. I think you need 4 points out of Preston and QPR. If you don't get 4 points out of that,
no.
For me, gone.
Are we going to have another Christmas podcast second?
I think we will. It does seem to happen every year, doesn't it?
Well, it's the right time to do it, isn't it? I think it was, I think we were saying that, you know, when Adkins went, it was the right time to do it because he got a new manager going into January.
Yeah.
He's allowed to do what he did. And look what Steve Clark did. He brought in Nathaniel Taloba and turned everything around.
I think wait till Fulham got a manager and a firing.
Yeah, but some people are like... But this
I mean,
is,
that's the reason we don't want to sack him, isn't it?
It's like, ironic.
You go first. Go on.
It could go from Reading potentially picking up a decent compensation fee to Reading actually having to pay him off.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a no-win. And that's why it does amuse me somewhat that
It's a conspiracy theory.
Well, no, but it's that some of the fans that are saying, oh, if he goes, it's terrible because look how much we've invested in him and his team. Yeah. And the same people saying, sack him, which will basically mean you lose the team and have to pay him off anyway. Anyway, that's a side point. Right, there are a few other mailbag questions. One from Jeff Hallett. This is an interesting one. Worth cashing in on Blackman in January? Don't buy the clamour for him playing centrally. He's an inside forward. Now,
and this actually directly contradicts what Charles Dapper said, where we put our leading goal scorer out on the right.
Yeah.
Which I think is the right thing to do, to be honest, because he likes
cuts
to
in
cut
and
in.
Shoots.
Yeah.
What about it then? If someone comes in, I mean, obviously he had that fantastic start to the season, but the goals have dried up in recent weeks. I'm not saying he's been playing badly. I'm not going to tune change that quickly. But if someone came in with a... Obviously he's out of contract in the summer, so it's not going to be loads. But if someone came in with a £3 million bid...
I think someone might.
Take it at the moment?
I think you'd take £3 million. Absolutely.
As a business deal, when you could end up with nothing... I think Reading have to. That's what I'm saying. Someone might test Reading's resolve and say, even offer him £2 million, say we'll give you £2 million for him now. I think Reading might say yes, because if he's going to go anyway, which might happen, then you'd have to take it, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All depends on me if they've got someone lined up to replace him.
If you've got a car that you're selling and someone's offering you money now, and in 6 months' time, you're going to lose it anyway, you're going to sell it, aren't you?
He might not lose it.
What
I mean,
shady deals are you doing?
It's not. He's not said, like, I'm definitely gone in the summer. So he might sign a new deal.
Yeah, he might. But the world's at his feet. I've said this before. When you're scoring goals and you're running out of contracts and you're playing in Championship, the world's at your feet. Now, I'm sure that already his agent's talking to other clubs saying, OK, how much are you willing to pay for him every week?
He's not got Alex Pearce's agent.
Yeah, Robson Carnews and some of the others, yeah.
Robson Carnews' sibling.
Alex Pearce, who no one's said anymore.
Oh, dear. Poor Pearcey. At least his team are above Reading in the league, I suppose. Ben Prim.
Will he get a winner's medal, though?
He hasn't played any games. Would you want
one? That's the question. Here's a Pudjack question. Would you want one if you sat on the bench all season?
I don't know. People like Richard Wright seem perfectly happy picking them up.
It's embarrassing, though.
It's like we had Stuart Taylor, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He must have a few medals accumulated in
the
cabinet.
Yeah, I think he's played
like
30
professional matches. Do you believe Richard Wright is still playing? And he was on the bench for City.
Well, he's had so much rest that it probably plays he's about 60.
How could you even come into the team after not... I don't think he's played... There was something like 3 years since he'd been on the bench.
Yeah, oh, here's a question for you, right? If you'd sat on a bench all season and you played like made two or three appearances, would you even bother going to the celebratory party afterwards?
I would.
Oh yeah.
I would feel
cash in.
I would feel like I shouldn't be there.
Yeah, but the point is you were there waiting to come on. It was the manager's choice you didn't get played.
Yeah, you was waiting to come on, but you didn't actually win anything.
You were good
enough. Yeah.
You played 2 or 3 games, Wesley. Maybe those 2 or 3 games won you the league.
Yeah, but that's like me and you being in a 106 team, sitting on the bench every week, and then Koppel win a 5-0 up saying, do you want 10 minutes? Yeah, all right.
It's like
John Holmes.
Yeah. I'd feel a little bit aggrieved that I think I'm picking up a winner's medal and I haven't done anything.
Curtis Asano.
Yeah. It's embarrassing.
Graham Stack. Graham Stack picked up his medal.
And if you did pick it up, would you display it at home and regale about how great you were?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I would.
At that time you saw me on Sky, sitting behind Steve Clark.
Yeah. In the stands, when I didn't even get on the bench. Remember that?
Excellent stuff.
Didn't ask the question, would you?
Yeah, I'd pick up.
You would, yeah. Okay.
I'll
put that one out to listeners. Would you pick up a winner's medal if you'd made 3 appearances?
Melt it down at the very least, get a bit of cash out of that.
Melt it down.
Or sell it.
Take it to cash converters.
Just do what Mourinho does, just chuck it in the crowd. You know, runners up, never good enough.
Finally, Ben Print. Says, with form dropping considerably since Quinn has been out, which former players were most missed when injured?
It wasn't injured, but the name that instantly sprung to mind for me was Steve Sidwell.
Yeah.
He was the beating heart of that team in 06-07. And then you could see, I mean, they talk about second season syndrome, but as soon as he left, we never really replaced him. And, you know, you saw what happened the next season. We didn't have that drive in the middle of the midfield. So he wasn't injured, but he was certainly a player that, you know, you could see that he was missed when he was gone.
Yeah. Also, another player, again, it's a bit controversial, but I think Kebe, when he was in top form, if he was missing, Reading missed him. Because it's his pace alone, and he just frightened teams, and I don't think anyone could come in and replace him when he was on his best form.
Ledgerwood and Karachan as well, both players that in that side were so vital, especially Ledgerwood.
Yeah. Inga Marson as well, he was another sort of unsung hero. He never done anything spectacular, but he never let you down, and when he was missing, which wasn't very often, I think they missed him as well, because Sonko was a law unto himself sometimes.
I think the best thing about Reading is that very rarely have they relied on a single player. So it's a lot harder to pick out superstar players that, you know, when they were missing, the team struggled.
The 106 team was a collective side, you know, when there was no standout brilliant players, but they were all good at what they'd done. I agree with you there.
Anyway, that wraps up what is a huge mailbag. So again, thank you very much to everyone who got in touch via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, via thetarlhurstend@gmail.com for the emails, and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. Please keep them coming throughout the week and do use that hashtag TTE podcast. In the meantime, we've got the small matter of the fake hoops on Thursday night to take care of. So we'll preview that game as well as a few other bits of any other business.
The Tarlhurst End podcast.
Any other business.
It might shock you to hear this, guys, but Reading v QPR has been picked for television coverage.
Yeah, what's that all about on a Thursday as well? I don't get that.
It's just a regular slot now. There's Thursday night games.
Okay.
I thought it was because aren't they doing 10 days of Football League in 10 days?
10 days of hell.
I think there's been a few Thursday night games, so...
Really? I missed them.
Reading, I think the whole game might be a Thursday as well.
Yeah, Hull's on a Thursday. It certainly is.
Okay.
So anyway, the Sky TV cameras come to the Bedeski to see us play QPR on Thursday. QPR... 12th in the Championship at the moment. They've won 6, drawn 5, lost 7. They have a certain Mr. Neil Warnock in charge, certainly for the time being as we record Colin. This podcast. Yep, Colin. They're away.
Hull's on a Wednesday, sorry.
Is Hull on a Wednesday?
It is, yeah.
And there we go.
Well, we have played on every single day of the week by the time the season's out.
Wow.
Food for thought there.
Stat for you.
I can't be asked to look, I'm going to be honest.
Can't be asked to go.
I might stop the recording right there. I'm just done with it. Neil Warnock and QPR come to the ground. They've not won away from home since August the 29th when they beat Huddersfield.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, there we go. 6 away games, that a win. So we all know what that means.
That means a win.
Does mean a win. Their last game, however, they did pick up all 3 points. They beat Dirty Leeds in a Warnock derby. 1-0. Charlie Austin back on the score sheet. I don't seem to remember Charlie Austin really haunting Reading. No. Obviously, he was part of Reading's academy and they released him, thinking he wasn't quite good enough. They'd brought in this young, highly rated prospect named Simon Church.
Yeah.
Who started taking Austin's playing time.
Again, good choice.
Simon Church of the MK Dons bench.
People develop at different times.
They do. They do, as I'm sure Sheffield Wednesday fans will be lamenting with one Jamie Vardy at the moment. But anyway... if you look at their team, it is still got a lot of Premier League players in it. It's a strong side. I mean, obviously, said Charlie Austin's the star man. But you still think Reading should win this. If they've got serious playoff and promotion ambitions, they should be trying to win this game.
They've got some good players, though, QPR, aren't they? I know they don't always perform, but on their day, they've got some good players.
Sandro, Fowlin, Phillips, Hoylett. They're all players that
are good players.
Not mind at all having... in the team.
Yeah, on their day, they're excellent. So,
Tell you what, you talk about driving desire. Forlan. For him to keep coming back, he's had, what, 2 or 3?
Cruciates,
and he keeps coming back. Credit to him.
Shame, because he's a good player as well, isn't he?
Yeah. Matty Phillips. The likes of Phillips, Austin and Forlan are players that are going to hurt Reading.
Even Konchesky, I mean, he's been around the block, but he was solid, isn't he, wherever he plays.
For trivia facts for you, do you know that he's opened a pie and mash shop?
Has he?
Do you know what he's called it? Conch's Cafe. Really? Both with a K.
Nice.
There you go. So if you fancy some pie and mash.
Oh, you'll be getting advertising rights for this.
Well, now that you mention it, Westy, for low pie and mash prices, head to Conch's Cafe.
For a
limited time only, Tarlhurst End podcast listeners can pay 100% of the regular price. That concludes your non-paid for announcement. I feel this podcast is very rapidly off track. And speaking of off track or off road, if you are travelling to the game on Thursday, we've already moaned about parking on one side of the coin. This is a far more basic one. If you're travelling between junction 10 and 11 on Thursday night, you're going to be a bit snookered because from 9 o'clock, there are roadworks that are closing that junction. So you can look forward to a nice snarl up around early.
That was extremely well organised and planned. That was brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Let's just shut them in for.
As someone that has to venture up and down that cursed road many a time, I know the pain only too well of the unexpected diversion.
Yeah, but then I suppose in their defence, they probably didn't think there'd be a game on Thursday.
Yeah. Anyway, what? Anything else to say on this game before we come on to the prediction league?
No, I think we can get beat.
We'll get beat.
The negative tactics.
There are so many points where I just want to hit stop and we just cold close this show.
Wait, what did I say last week? My exact words were, I'm going to start predicting Brendan to get beat in the hope that they start winning. I've got my first points on a prediction league.
You have, Mr. Anna West, which segues us nicely into prediction league, and you've picked up 3 points, your first 3 points of the season.
I know.
Correctly predicting the Nottingham Forest. Oh, no, sorry, you've only picked up 1 point.
Just a point.
Just a point.
But I was a bit gutted about last goal winning because I knew I'd done 2-1.
Yeah, that was it. I just remember you being in the lead. Sorry, apologise for bigging you up. But you've got a point.
I'm off the markish.
But you're off the bottom as well.
Yeah.
You've risen back above Handbags Harrison to 5 points.
I'm going for all defeats from now on.
Okay.
And I bet I'll win it.
Handbags predicted a Reading win. Myself, Johnny and Charles Watts all predicted draws, so none of us got points. So it's as you were, with Charles at the top, myself second, Johnny third. Westy moves up above Handbags to fourth, and Handbags bottom of the league by a point. So, given that you're on a roll, Westy, and you've already said you're going to predict doom.
Defeat. I'm predicting defeat. It's going to be 1-0 QPR.
Okay. Johnny?
I'm going to go for a gloriously thrilling 3-2 win.
Wow.
I hope you're right, mate.
So do I. I want to be entertained.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 Reading. I'll get the predictions of Mr. Handbags Harris and Charles Watts a little later in the week. Hopefully we'll be doing a podcast extra on Friday. But as we noted on the podcast extra on Friday, they've been a bit hit and miss. So I don't like to promise anything now, but stay tuned to the old feed on iTunes. One more piece of news before we have to go. Johnny, I'll let you tee this one up.
Yep, Player of the Month, if you can dare to pick one for November, is up. You've got 3 nominees. I think it's Ali Alhabzi, Nick Blackman and Oliver Norwood.
So, Nick Blackman's won all 3 previous votes, hasn't he?
Yep. So,
I don't think he'll win this one, but yeah.
No.
I think Norwood probably takes it for me off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I think, Alhabzi's been decent apart from that mistake.
If Alhabzi hadn't had last week, then I think he'd be a shoo-in for it.
But. Yeah, I reckon that as well.
Wow.
It's always bad news when your goalkeeper's starting to get awards.
Yeah, never good, especially when they get man of the match against Bolton.
Yeah.
Anyway, that does wrap up the show. I said a big thank you to everyone who's got in touch and who's taken the time to listen to the show, send in thoughts and whatnot. It all is all very much appreciated indeed. There's plenty more content analysis up on thetalisend.com, and hopefully, as I said, there'll be a podcast extra up on Friday where myself and Charles will reflect on that whole game and start taking a slight look forward to the Preston away game, although that is a couple of weeks away. It'd be nice to have the weekend off and not have Reading to worry about.
It would be.
Well, it will be.
It's going to happen.
For once, my weekend won't be ruined.
Yeah.
Exactly. Come rain or shine, I won't have to worry about Reading on Saturday. But if you do want to worry about Reading, as I said, head over to the website. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for joining me this week, as always. We'll hopefully be back probably Monday, Tuesday. Keep you updated. But in the meantime, come on, you arse. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.